What are the top 10 movies set in one location?
From grisly stories like Reservoir Dogs to blockbusters with big blockbuster directors like Martin Scorsese's Shutter Island, stay tuned to find out what the top 10 movies set in one location are, according to us.
Okay, guys, new channel, same rules. It's me, the one AJ Anthony Jordan.
And it's me, Nico Luro. And this week, after you've all hit subscribe, like the video, and turn on your notification bells, we may continue to talk about the top 10 movies set in one location. Sort of one location. What's your number 10, AJ?
Right, sort of indeed. I have been really tough on myself on this one, guys. I've tried to keep it as much in one location. So there are some where I've kind of broken the rules, but at most times I've tried to keep it all in one. And in at number 10 for me is a movie I found on Amazon last year, actually, by the name of Cage. Yeah, very interesting movie. I can't even tell you the name of the young lady who's an actress. British, actually. Actually followed her on Instagram because I thought, let me see what else she gets up to. And it's the story of a girl who is a Philadelphia call girl. And she wakes up one day and she's in, I think she does like the phone sex and stuff when I say call girl. She doesn't go out and do
mission. Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah, she's a phone sex girl. Bit shady on it. And she wakes up and she's in a cage in a container. And through that, she is now having a conversation with her kidnapper, who's now talked about the reason why he's kidnapped her, why she's away. And it goes on to him leaving and going out of town and coming back in, you know, and having communications. But you never, ever see the guy. She's got this phone and he'll always provide certain bits to allow her to survive. At one point, she gets to the phone with her boyfriend, but she doesn't know where the location is, so he can't save her. You know, it's all these different elements, and then it comes to a head. There is one plot twist that brings in a twist of real events when it tells you something, and you're like, oh shit, like when you think it's going the right way, a real life event ticks in and it just takes a turn. You're like, oh gosh, did that happen? But an actual, really, don't expect Oscar bait movie. It's not that, right? But the story had me gripped the whole way through. So Cage is definitely something to view for free on Amazon. I thought I'd give it a mention.
Speaking of giving a mention, you know what I didn't mention? Is how the show actually works. We got too excited.
Indeed, yes. Please, for anyone joining us for the first time, how does the movie Mount Rushmore work?
It's basically a top 10 show between two best friends from school. Here's how it works. AJ and I each get assigned a topic. We go our separate ways. We come right back here into the video, into the channel, and deliver to you, the film family, the silver screen dudes, our new audience, hopefully, our individual top 10s. Each and every week, we flip who goes first. This week, AJ will go first, delivering his bottom three. I will then deliver my bottom three. AJ will deliver his next two. I will deliver my next two. Then we will trade one apiece when we get to our top five. If at any time while we are rounding off our individual top 10 list, one person has a movie in a higher position, the person will say,
punt.
And we will punt and talk about that movie when we get to the high position. Once we have both rounded off our individual top 10s, we will create the movie Mount Rushmore. These are the four quintessential diverse must-see movies of this genre. And what happens after we've done every single Rushmore each week, AJ?
Right, then it goes over to you because we, the Silver Screen Dudes, create the movie Mount Rushmore. Then it's over to you, the screeners, to head on over to Twitter at Movie MT Rushmore, where you will vote for a film out of those four categories to crown the best of the best of the best, sir, with honours, El Capitan, El Numero Uno, and in the, and to quote Highlander, in the end, there can be only one. So, are we doing last topic?
Nope.
Or we leave it
starting fresh.
Okay, we move on. We're starting fresh. So that's the one. And we will announce the winner next week. So it'll be a bit smoother next week, guys, but that's the one. So you've heard my number 10. And
your number nine.
Bottom three, we continue and we go over to my number nine. This one is called Exam.
Ah, I've heard of this. I really wanted to watch this.
I must admit, what really got me excited, and it sounds bad, I'm not going to say I know him like I can call him, but I know Colin Salmon. I've met him a few times. He's a really great guy to talk to. Interviewed him a few times. So when I realized he was in it and it's all set in one location, all over it. Yeah, you need to search for this film. That's what I'll say.
It's on YouTube. Told...
Is it now?
It's on YouTube. Cool.
That's cool. Yeah, that's where I saw it. So the story is really interesting. You have these candidates who have come into a room. They've got a table, pen, paper, and they're all sat there. And the invigilator comes in and he says, right, you will have to answer one question. It's all to do with being hired for this job. So you've all been here. You've all applied. You've all come here. Now, the rules are you cannot damage your paper. You cannot do this. You cannot do that. If you leave the room, you forfeit and you lose out. And the last person who can answer the question correctly gets hired, essentially. Are there any questions? And everyone's there looking around. And it's, okay, look at your paper. The paper is blank. The invigilator leaves the room. Now, it's a mission to try and figure out what is the question. How can you do it? And it's all about listening to small details in the situation. For instance, one lady starts to write straight away. She gets ejected. And she's like, but what? No. So that's her. Because she's now destroyed her paper. So now you can lose the rule of you cannot destroy your own paper. So if you rip her paper to try and find clues as to what the question is, you can survive. So now it's a matter of, do they work together? Do they work individually, all to try and find out what the question is and how is it to be answered? It was really interesting. The elements that they used, literally all within one room, was really smart. You know, the different ways that people get eliminated, questions of trust. It had a lot to it. The ending, slightly fluffed in my opinion, but still an interesting film. It kept me on edge, like, ooh, which way does this go? And they use different elements to make you want to go forward with it, you know?
And we don't mean Adam Copeland, but sadly I cannot add anything because I haven't seen it. But it sounds cool. Good.
No, it's on YouTube. Check it out.
And you're number 8.
In at number 8, this is an interesting one. Because when I tell you, it has Oscar winners and Oscar nominees. And it's directed by Roman Polanski.
Oh. Have you heard of it?
Would you like to see the cast?
Yes.
The poster's coming now. It's called Carnage. It features Jodie Foster, Kate Winslet, Christoph Waltz, and John C. Reilly.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. So apparently, it's based off of, I believe it's a French play called Le Dieu de Carnage, which is essentially the God of Carnage. And that's what ensues with this story. You have four parents in an apartment talking. So the couple is John C. Reilly and Kate Winslet, Jodie Foster and Christoph Waltz. And their two sons, Jodie Foster and Christoph Waltz's son has used a stick and has beaten John C. Reilly and Kate Winslet's child, and he's lost his teeth because of it. And now these parents have gone into like a mediation, and you can see the initial story starts with them talking about the son armed with a stick, and they're like, well, armed is a bit excessive. And then you start to realize that Christoph Waltz is a lawyer, but very high powered. And you start to see now the whole balance of it is two parents essentially protecting their kid. Their own kid and the way they move forward. So it starts off as they've come to a resolution. Christoph Waltz and Jodie Foster are leaving John C. Reilly and Kate Winslet's house. And then someone makes a comment. Well, you know, maybe it would be good if the kids spoke a bit more and we can get to the bottom of why this happened. Okay, that's interesting. So then they're just about to go to the elevator, back into the apartment. Okay, why'd you say this? Oh, it should be at our house. Well, should we really send the victim to the abuser's house? How dare you call my son the abuser? And it goes into all of these levels of defensive, okay. Of my defense, your defense. And it's really cool in the way it just shows what actual instincts are in it. And then you start to see that the defenseless parents maybe aren't so innocent, because you find out that something like John C. Reilly isn't a big fan of rodents. So they've got another kid and she had a hamster, and because he's not a big fan of hamsters, he just went out and dumped it in the park one day to get rid of it. And they're like, well, you guys are such nice people, but why did you feel it was right to just kill the hamster? He's like, oh, I didn't touch it, you know. And it's all these different elements, and then it's going from family against family to wife from the wives against the husbands because of different perspectives and all of these different angles. But each time that the couple are leaving the house, they've got another reason to get them back in the house. And the arguments ensue all around. It was a very interesting watch. Really interesting.
That sounds brilliant.
Top film. Top film.
Oof.
And that's my bottom three.
Okay, I would like to make a disclaimer that my bottom two are absolute world-class cheats. world-class cheats. My only excuse is that, as AJ will testify, for the last 2 weeks, I have been on a tiny little, it's not tiny, but a big Italian island called Sardinia, where the valley I was in filming had no freaking signal. So
that's wrong.
Getting online to Netflix, Amazon, no. So I've had to fill in some blanks here. So forgive the cheating, but I'll try to argue a point. I can't do this with a straight face. Fuck it. Yes, I mean what I'm saying now. My number 10. Jaws.
What?
Okay. Let me try and break it down. Look, ultimately, what Spielberg is trying to do with this movie, tell me if you agree. This part I legitimately mean. Tell me if you agree with this part or not. The crux of this movie is the three-way between Robert Shaw, Richard Dreyfuss, and Roy Scheider on that boat, right?
Yes.
Everything that kind of happens before that is essentially a vessel to get to that boat. The point
I'll give
of
you
that,
I'll give you that.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's very good. Like, I'm not saying get... Well, let me correct myself mid-sentence. I'll raise you this. If that movie started with them getting on the boat, you would be perfectly understanding of what's happening. You would be perfectly understanding of what the hell it is they're trying to do. You would have a fully formed understanding of who these characters are within 2 seconds, and you would instantly be aware of the kind of passive aggressive that transforms into active aggressive hostility, I guess you would call it, that exists between these three guys. And we have a movie. Yeah. You could literally set the whole of Jaws on this boat. The argument being, yes, but the whole of Jaws is not set on the boat. Sure. My point of view, and it's not just for the purpose of making sure it fits on this list without being called too much of a cheater. That is part of it. I don't deny this. But genuinely, while trying to think of some bullshit argument of how I can get Jaws on this list, I actually started thinking about this and legitimately feel that you could set the whole movie on that boat and ignore the beginning. What is that opening third of Jaws, maybe even opening half? It's exposition. It's Lorraine Gary, you know, his wife, doesn't play much of a role. You literally don't even see her after they come back to land. She's like gone and that's it. Yes, there's the thing with his kids nearly getting attacked, which makes it personal for him. And yes, you have the shark attacks. But legitimately, if you said three guys are going out on a boat to hunt a shark that's been terrorizing a town, in, straight away in.
The beginning
is necessary to establish, especially Richard Dreyfuss and Roy Scheider. It's especially important to establish who they are. But once you get on the boat and you introduce Robert Shaw to this little doubly deuce of characters, and you start seeing like the social commentary and social narrative being done about positions of power within society, about you got workers' hands and you've been counting, you got rich boys' hands, you've been counting money your whole life. I don't need to take this working class hero bullshit. You know, there's all of this interesting stuff that happens on the boat. You can need a bigger boat. All of the big moments of the movie effectively happen on that vessel, the Indianapolis scene. It's all on the boat. Like, the crux of what Spielberg is trying to do with that movie is get you onto the fucking boat. It's a cheat. Yes. I recognize it's a cheat.
Yeah. I respect the fact that you made it your number 10. I get what you're saying. It defends you a lot that you kept it at number 10. Because Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of different locations, but the key crux of the film is within the location that you stated. So I can give you that.
Yay. My number nine is not so much cheap, but it's very meta. It's very meta as a decision. So what visually, it's all over the place. Metaphorically, it's all in one place. And not even metaphorically, psychologically, it's all in one place. AJ.
You're going with the film that I nearly went for. Because I was tempted to do that as a unique location. I know exactly where you're going. I was very tempted to do that.
It all happens in his mind.
Yeah, yeah. With that, I could have... I agree 100%. And I was very tempted to go down that route. And truth be told, I forgot. So well played for bringing that up.
Dude, like, listen, yes, it's filler because I didn't have time to watch other newer movies, but...
But it's logical at the same time.
It is. Like, you could make an argument that it's two locations because there's the point where everything's happening in the movie is in his mind, but where is he in fact? He's in that kind of round
table. He's in there as well, for better or worse anyway. So,
but he's in that round table with all of those psychiatrists looking over him. But then you've got the second scene right at the end, you know, where Murder Boy goes and kills the escort while she's picking oranges.
Yeah.
That part happens in a car. But allow me one scene of not being room.
If that is the case, and I know what you're saying. It's not within the confines of the... But then even what are the limits to the woods? I don't know if that's just outside of the woods. The trees could, the fruit could be just there. I don't know. I don't know the limits of his mind.
No.
You play it meta.
The fruit's happening in his mind as well.
But what I'm saying is where the murders take place in that in and around that abandoned cabin.
I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not even focused on where we are in his mind. I'm just on the fact that where is he physically while we're in his mind? Yeah. So identity is freaking great. So one dude suffers from multiple personality disorder or identity disorder, as it was called back then. And it's like 12 different identities all converging together very violently. It's got you got Jake Busey, you got John Cusack. Amanda Pete, thank you, well remembered. It's got relatively...
The guy plays the one is that underrated actor, and I remember you brought up his name once. He's an underrated actor. I cannot remember his name for the life of me.
He was also the trucker in Monster, right?
He's that, but he's also... I always remember him from The Mentalist, sadly. I can't remember his name now. But yeah, he's underrated as hell as an actor. The guy can perform.
He is. And identity is a fun movie.
Vince.
There you go.
Yeah.
Him. Identity is a really fun film. Getting on a bit now. We were still at school when this fucker came out. So it's...
Yeah, it could be TBT territory for us.
Have a look at Throwback Thursday. Check out the other videos on our channel if you haven't done so already from last week, Throwback Thursday. Woo, we got some doozies. All right, my number eight. People hate this film. I saw it twice in the cinema and I enjoyed it both times. Had a blast with it. Colin Farrell, Forest Whitaker, in Phone Booth.
Fucking up. Do you know what? I had a list and Phone Booth was on it, and yet somehow I've got a top 10 without it. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 5,
I like 10, Phone Booth.
I like it. It's funny. I've seen Phone Booth and I've also seen... Have you seen Liberty Stand Still?
No, I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Identical movie. Identical movie.
No, really.
And both work. Like, Wesley Snipes is in the other one, and he's the voice on the phone. But yeah, works. Yeah, well played. I can't believe I forgot.
Yeah, so one location, if you want to be really pedantic, but what's the fun in that? It's New York, specifically a phone booth. And to get to the phone booth, I believe he's walking from Times Square to the phone booth. The whole movie is inside of a phone booth.
Indeed.
So Colin Farrell enters this phone booth, and then he gets a phone call, and it's a sniper who's looking at him. And the sniper very slowly starts, because when someone picks up a phone to you and says, I'm looking at you down the barrel of a sniper rifle, you're like, of course you are, mate. Then he starts to prove that he's a sniper looking down the barrel at him. And the tension is freaking great, because you realize that this sniper has planned not just 2 or 10, he's like 20 moves ahead of him. Like, I'll save you. Oh, I didn't shoot the guy. There's a gun in that phone booth with you. No, there's not. I didn't bring a gun. Look up, look above you. Oh, shit. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's top to bottom. Really clever. Really simple, but really clever and highly entertaining. And Colin Farrell is just great. He's just great in everything he does. I feel about Colin Farrell the way Rajesh Kuthrapali feels about Sandra Bullock without the
attraction. Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
There's one for you. Cool. So that was my 8. Your number 7.
So I did have a number 7, and your number 10 made me get rid of something. So my number 4 is no longer my number 4, right? Because my new number 7... Sorry, I didn't want to get the images off wrong before, but my new number 7 is, in fact, this film. The Shallows, which I think is a more apt shark movie of being in one location.
Yeah, I'll give you that. She's literally on a rock.
On a rock. Literally on a rock while
I'm
a shark...
I'm really angry. I didn't think of that.
I nearly gave it to you, and I thought, you know what? My number 4 I've brought up a few times recently, and I'm trying to keep it a little fresh. So, yeah, this is my new number 7. The Shallows, who, yeah, surfer, gets injured, lands on a rock, and now a shark is surrounding her, so she doesn't know how to get back. And she befriends a little seagull. Literally the story. Can she make it back to dry land? Can she not? Who knows? I remember us going to the cinema to see this and having a real good time with it. You know, we've done dinosaurs, we've done sharks. So we say that, like, Jaws cannot be outdone. And for dinosaurs, Jurassic Park can't be outdone. No. The Shallows is a shark movie I will give time to. It's not Jaws, but it's a shark movie I'll give time to.
There's a few shark movies I'll give time to. Some for different reasons, but there's a few I'd give time to. This, I thought, was legitimately quite good. Although, side note, if you're new to the channel, hi, I'm Nico. I do underwater filming and I film mostly sharks. Sharks don't behave that way. That's
fair enough, but it's a movie. Doesn't shark. Happen. The movie mysticism of a shark. Yeah,
correct. But let me reassure you, what you saw in The Shallows, sharks don't do. It's just not a thing. I promise. Yes, I like that choice, and I thought Blake Lively was great in it.
Indeed, she was. Indeed, she
not
was.
As good as the seagull, but the seagull.
That's deep. That's deep.
Hey, the seagull was good, man. Come on.
It was. In at number 6 for me, bit of a cheat, it is Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
Why is this cheat?
I feel it's a cheat because it's not in just one room. It's the theatre.
It's in the theatre, yeah.
It's the theatre. Like, I'm trying to keep it into one room or one rock, you know?
One
like,
rock.
The exam is one room. Cage is in a cage. Like, this is the stage. It's the backstage area. It's the roof. It's the road just around it. It's in and around the theatre in one long shot, you know? Some could argue, kind of like Identity, it's in the mind of Birdman. But we won't go there. But it's just that continuous loop that goes round. And it kept playing with me. As much as I didn't want to, because I feel it was a bit of a cheat, I was like, Birdman is in one location. And also, it allows my number 3 to exist if you're allowed to go just beyond the perimeters of one location. So if that was allowed, Birdman was allowed. It's in and around the perimeters. And that's the most I'm willing to travel when it comes to one location. Great film, though. Great film. The story of a man who...
freaking great film.
Who was ultrally famous before from a TV show known as Birdman. And now just doing small theatre and just trying to recreate that presence. But all at the same time battling his inner demon, as it were, of his former self, who's showing him how great he was and how the world is to appreciate him. Yeah, I had a great journey with this film.
Oh, the cast in this film between Michael Keaton, between Emma
Stone.
I always get them mixed up for some reason. Emma Stone, Edward Norton, like, dude, it's so good. It is so freaking good. I love the interpersonal relationships with all the characters. I love the snobbery that's effervescing off of the screen in the theater. Theater snobbery that effervesces off the screen is so organic feeling in this movie. I love it. And oh, I just love Inarritu as a director. I love him. He's amazing.
He does good. I'm sure there are, I think that, I can't remember what I saw that made me think there's a miss, but he, yeah, I like what he delivers. I do like what he delivers, so I'm not gonna knock him.
Dude, between this, Babel, The Revenant, 21 grams, like, oh, Jesus. He's got quite the filmography. That was your six, yeah?
Indeed, yes.
All right. My number seven, you want to talk one location? Woo! I have something smaller than a room for you, AJ. I have a seat.
Oh!
Specifically, a car seat.
I wanted to watch this. Tom Hardy, right?
Yeah. Lock. So freaking good. I can't tell you. You want to see a modern powerhouse acting display, I invite you to watch Lock. It's, oh, every single conversation he has on the phone, it is literally Tom Hardy acting with a freaking telephone. Every single conversation that he has on the telephone. If you are older than 15 years old and you have done more in your life than take a shit, every single conversation you'll be like, I could see myself there. Not in a good way, but like, we are all fallible human beings and we all make mistakes. And what we are seeing play out in front of us is a man coming to terms with a long list of mistakes that he's made, asking for forgiveness, dealing with rejection, asking for repentance, not receiving it, trying to balance a family work dynamic, trying to balance a double family dynamic. It's just like, how are you doing this in a car?
Jealous. I'm so jealous that you saw this. It was on the
list. ITV.
Even better. No, bro, it was just time-wise now. It just escaped me.
Short movie too. It's like an hour and a half.
Nice. Well played.
So good. Bang so it. Good. Bang it. That was my seven. My six. Oh. Yes, I brought this one up. Was it zombie movies on the podcast where I brought this up before? I love this film. Pontypool.
Oh, okay, yes. For a minute, I thought he was going to say, this is the end. But
I love that film. Fucking love that film, and I know you don't. No, Pontypool is... it's a zombie movie that's not a zombie movie.
I remember hearing this.
It's so clever because... So it deals with a theological concept, which is infection by words, right? So what happens to the characters in this movie is that there are certain words and sentences and speeches that turn people into zombies. And at first glance, you're like, what the fuck? Speech? How can talking create zombies? But then you realize that it's not meant literally. Obviously, what's happening in the film is you're seeing literal zombies. But like with a lot of what I call ut horror, elevated horror, it's usually metaphorical. It's not literal. You know, it's not The Walking Dead going, eat brain. It's a lot smarter than that. Words affect us. Words infect us as well as affect us. Words embed themselves with us. They can cause torment. They can cause decay of the soul. Words are powerful. You know, there's that expression that people love to use, which I hate and triggers me something rotten when they say, I'm not responsible for your feelings. It's like, actually, you kind of are, because your words sting. Like, if you've case in point, you've just had a mother that's died. Someone disses your mother. Yeah, you're not responsible for the mum being dead, but you're responsible for bringing back that memory and triggering me something oh so rotten. So words hurt and matter, and words affect and infect the mind and the soul. And that's the concept that Pontypool deals with. And it deals with so well.
Nice.
All set in one location in a freaking radio station. So the one thing which you can't do, which is speak, and you're trying to fight that and warn people from an area where you are speaking.
Interesting.
It's so interesting. It's so interesting, dude. I love Pontypool. But yeah, that's my six. So you're five.
You were the one who reminded me of this film, actually. Now, the ending is something I sussed out a very early on in the film, and it kind of killed it for me, but I do appreciate it as the horror, thriller slash horror that it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's John Cusack, Samuel L. Jackson.
Ah.
1408.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bro.
Creepy. It's yeah, as I said, my problem was, without wanting to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, I knew the way to get out of the room. It was, I was like, I would do that. I'm just waiting for him to do that. And until he'd done it, I was like, why don't you just do that kind of thing?
Yeah.
But it's all about a guy who's a reporter who follows stories, ghost stories, XYZ, and has been tasked with spending one night in the infamous room 1408. No one
self-tasked.
Self-tasked to disprove that, you know, the myth. Yes, anyone, you know, because it's no one has ever survived a night in that room. So he's like, I will survive it. He goes into the room. He's brought into the room by creepy clerk Samuel L. Jackson, and the madness ensues. Did it really happen? Is it the mind playing tricks? Who knows? It's everything within one room that it's the worst hotel experience you can ever ask for. If we're
literally
honest. It's the worst experience you can ever get. Right.
Even Hostel is looking at this going, fucking hell.
I'm a step back right now. You do you. Hey, mister. Oh, yeah, I'll follow you, kid. But yeah, it's all kinds of creepy. As I said, slightly saw the ending, but apart from that,
The part which really made me go, oh, is when it stopped being creepy and actually started being scary was when Cusack grabbed his things and was like, nope, and tried leaving the first time and the room didn't let him. I was like, okay, I'm a bit scared now.
Yeah, you get these kind of moments. It's been a very long time since I've seen it, but when I thought of like one location, this came into it. But I do remember when it's like, okay, it started to get to him, but it's like, oh, he can't get out. Interesting. Physically not get out? And then you start to ask all the questions and it all starts to go into a spiral. But yeah,
it's a criminally underseen movie, this one.
I believe it is.
I don't hear people talking about it, and it's actually really, really good.
I saw it very early on, like out of the cinema onto DVD. That's how early I saw it. It's not one I've seen again since. So it is really like, it's not rated enough as one of the top films.
It's not. It's a really good modern horror movie, this one. I would call this haute horror. This is elevated horror for me.
Cool.
That was your five?
It was indeed.
My five, it's the spiritual remake of Reservoir Dogs. It's not a remake because it's not Reservoir Dogs, but it's very much a spiritual remake. I reviewed it way back when on our old channel. Amazing. Free Fire.
Ah, I actually don't recall you doing that one.
Now, Sharlto Copley, the crazy South African, he who shouldn't be named anymore, Armie Hammer, Brie Larson, Cillian Murphy. Oh, very simple premise. Everyone meets in a warehouse for an arms deal, and the arms deal goes wrong. Ensue massive shootout with larger than life characters who all seem to be either knowing each other or have come into each other's contact before, and who all thoroughly don't respect or like each other. so don't really mind the fact that there's a shootout and they're kind of just trying to fucking kill the other person.
Sounds fun.
It's fun as hell. Bro, I cannot...
Really?
It's all they've done is make these characters big personalities. I mean, Charlton Copley steals the freaking show, man. It's Vern, the South African, yeah? But this is one line. This is one line in the movie which will make you laugh. Like when they're ducking and covering, and he refers to himself in the third person. So, yo, Vern doesn't play that way, yeah? But there's a point where he's running away, and his colleague is saying to him, like, where are you going? He's like, yo, watching Vern. It's like, watch and Vern, I love you. I love everything about you. And let's be very clear. People get shot multiple times before they die in this movie. So, you know, it kind of ensues of corpses dragging themselves going, ah, blah, 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 blah. It's such fun, I can't tell you. All the while, the warehouse almost looking at them menacingly with these holes in the wall, kind of resembling some sort of toothless, malicious grin. Everything about this movie is well made. It's fucking great.
Cool. Did I add that to the list? I think I did. That's interesting. I don't recall seeing a review for that, but yeah, I'm gonna check it out.
Oh, it's there. It's there.
I'm check it out.
So cool. That was my five, your four.
So this is one that you reviewed this year.
Oh?
One that had you with a bit of emotion, dare I say. This is the one that gave someone an Oscar. This is Brendan Fraser, The Whale.
Fuck!
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did I forget this? It's the first time I'm ever going to hear you speak about it. Go.
Do you know, I think your review opened me up to what this was. I just knew that Brendan Fraser was in a film that they were like, is going to be Oscar bait. I didn't actually see a trailer for it. I think I saw a minor one and I didn't know the whole depth of it. What came with it of a man who is practically given up on himself, but still so very selfless at the same time, was very, very touching. You know, the reason he does what he does, the life that he lives, the simplicity behind it, when in actuality, he could have turned it around. But because of certain, you say words, you know, I'm not responsible for your emotions. This is to show you the product of emotion, what circumstance can do to somebody and how they can fall out of who they were. You know, this is a man who was married, had a kid, left his wife and daughter for a boyfriend who happened to have been his student. I don't want to put it to current times, but it was less sordid than a certain This Morning TV presenter. You know, it was it wasn't anything wrong. He just happened to be his student. It was of age. It was consensual. It became something. They went into a relationship. And the certain individuals who Brendan Fraser meets along the way, the would-be sister-in-law, for better or worse terms, the new generation Mormon who comes along and believes he can help and what have you, his estranged daughter, all of these different people, the students that he teaches. It was just a very interesting journey. And, you know, you look at it and you think, you know, the sad thing is you look at it and depending on how you look after your health, you think to yourself, I'm just one burger away from being this guy. You know,
that's
what I got from this film. And you just look at the lifestyle that he built, and it was just a weird journey. That, you know, the funny thing was, the missus was in and out when I was watching this film, and she goes, like, what was the message of it? And when I had to break it down, that it's not just that was Carnage, but we kind of had it with this one as well, possibly a bit too close to home for her at the moment for certain reasons I'm not going to get into, but like, it was just a case of, this is what your mind is making you feel, And this is the mission, despite the fact that everyone else will see you as a complete failure, what he's done. It was really touching. I was really impressed by this film.
Yeah.
It got me in a way I wasn't expecting.
I told you, dude. I told
yeah.
you.
I didn't cry, but yeah.
No. I didn't cry either, but I felt like I'd been punched in the stomach. Like, I felt drained emotionally. I didn't cry, but I was like heavy-eyed throughout the whole movie going, it's some real shit. Like,
yeah.
The relationship he has with his daughter is so, it feels so authentic, dude. It's
you
just...
know, I don't want to say it on camera for fear of spoiling for anyone who hasn't seen it.
Mm.
But they're right. Can I say this film is Citizen Kane-esque in the way that it starts and ends? You know, when it hit me, I was like, oh man. Okay. Yeah, I must admit, throughout the film, I could watch it and I can understand the sacrifice and this, that, and the other. That moment, I was like, oh, that's when my heart took a. Yeah, it started to get tugged.
Yeah. It's a great film, dude. So far this year, only one movie's made me cry. And it's weird to say, it's Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Nice. I get that.
You've seen it now, yeah?
I have, yeah.
That ending, dude,
It is touching.
It is. And the fact that they didn't give you the ending that you wanted, but that you realized was a good ending.
Yeah.
I was like, well, bloody done. Because you kind of called it from the beginning. Oh, this is going to happen. They're going to meet. Everything's going to be fine. And then it's like, not really, no.
Can I just say, if you ever told me you're going to give me a rocket-based movie, because it's Rocket's movie.
It's Rocket's trilogy, I would argue.
But what I would say is, this was a side of Rocket I never thought you could expose me to. And I was ever so grateful for it.
Yeah.
Ever so
I loved grateful. Him. Rocket. Oh, he took my breath away. What they did with that movie has taken my breath away. I loved it. Anyway, stay on track. Yeah, The Whale is incredible. I'm so freaking glad you've seen it. Short of some miracle happening for the next 6 to 7 months, I expect that to be in your top 10 at the end of the year.
I believe so.
I would hope so.
I believe so.
That was your 4, yeah?
Yep.
All right. I'm going old school here, but I'm going international. Old school in the sense that... old school silver screen dudes, not old school in terms of movie. But let's go international. Let's go to Indonesia. Let's go up a big tower block for The Raid.
See, these films crossed my mind. They did cross my mind. And you're not wrong. If I can do Birdman, you can do The Raid. It's a fact.
It's a building.
Yeah.
I never said movie. We never agreed movie set in one room. Like,
no, this is fact. One location in a building.
Kind of, because there's a whole part where he's in his apartment, which is like one scene, and then they're in the police car going to the building, which is one scene, and then 98% of the movie is The Raid.
I would like to argue that when it comes to certain films, even down to even Carnage, which is entirely in the room, okay, it goes out to a lift and comes back in, you still get a backstory which explains it. Yes, it could have just been a radio thing and, you know, from the black into it, he's in the building. Sometimes it makes sense to give me a little backstory and is permissible as a one location because it builds towards it, you know?
Mm.
I think that's fair.
This movie, I think, has set the world on fire. If you've seen it, you'll agree. And if you haven't, I encourage you to find out what I'm talking about because it is very... very hard to make a martial arts movie, one, not be cheesy, and two, be believable. Because so often it's like, it's so far into the realms of cheese. I'm going to say it, and people are going to hate me for it. the Bruce Lee movies are cheesy. They're great. They're freaking great, but they're cheesy as hell.
I get what you're doing.
You've got real cheese, like Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter. Like, I mean, that's fromage of Roquefort strength. You know what I mean? Then you've got, you know, the ones which are more kind of fantastical, like your Crouching Tigers, like your House of Flying Daggers and stuff like that. Then you got your animated movies like Kung Fu Panda, which are really great. Very rarely in the modern age do you find something that feels gritty. You've got Tony Jaa's movies like The Protector and Ong Bak. And then you got Donnie Yen's stuff like Ip Man. And then you got this. And its sequel, The Raid Redemption. And bro, Jesus Mary of Joseph and all things holy and decent, this movie is a choreographical masterpiece.
Fact.
That final fight at the end, the 2-on-1, is one of the most stunning and at the same time terrifying and at the same time disgusting things I have ever seen.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's realistic, and it has you. It builds attention that you need to keep it grounded.
Even Dredd copied this.
Fact.
Dredd's great. Could have put Dredd on here too, but I was like, we'll pick one.
Well, you have to pick one.
Your number three, AJ.
My number three. So when I talk about In and Surroundings, this film came into it because it starts off in a car. I'll see the football field. I'll see the principal's office. But it's mainly...
I already know what you've picked.
The Breakfast Club.
Funny you say that, because that's my number three.
There we go. You know the Breakfast Club? I always say the funny thing about the Breakfast Club is when I was first recommended to it by yourself, I wasn't sure if I'd enjoy it. I was expecting something maybe more comedic, maybe more something. I didn't know what I was expecting. You know when they say sit down and shut up? Just sit down, shut up, let it breathe. The character pieces that then develop from this film is something that will always stick with me.
Yeah.
That's why I like The Breakfast Club. It's who you think you know. It's despite your differences, there are similarities, you know? And you can't... I can't speak for today's era of school kids. I don't know. I don't. I have a nephew who's just turned 16. I can't tell you I know what his life is about. I know the common ground we used to share.
Being offended.
But do you get what I'm saying? But like, not him, but that generation. But yes. What I saw there is stuff that even though it was a decade before I actually entered that high school phase, I could still relate to it point for point. Each person has their own gang, their own background. You never mix with this one, that or the other. Yet somehow in detention.
Their own. That
clicks, yeah, exactly that. And somehow or another, it just takes one moment. And when the person you think has got it all doesn't, the one you think is just being a prick for no reason has a reason. You know, each person, oh, if only I could be like you. Oh, really? Well, what about this? Oh, I wish I was more open. You know, there's a reason why you're quiet. There's a reason why you're loud. You may be smart, but you still get judged for being smart. And what happens when that tainted, you know, 100% becomes 98%? How does the world deem you then? All of these little bits just made me go, And the sad bit is that you know that there's that connection, but what will it mean on Monday?
Yeah. You take the Brat Pack, you take Judd Nelson, your Sheedys, your Ringwoods, your Esteveses, and your Halls. You put them together and magic happens. This movie, even the sensitive Gen Zers, I think if you have ever been of a certain age, like in this movie, you've always felt judged either by your peers, by your teachers, by your parents. You're naturally at an age where you feel, I wish people wouldn't judge me. I wish people wouldn't judge a book by its cover. Ironic in a perfect way, considering the whole movie, Don't Judge a Book by Its Cover, being the message, is set surrounded by books in a library. These things are all planned. That is the genius of John Hughes.
Do you know the funny thing as well? Is as much as it says don't judge a book by its cover, each book has judged another book as well.
Correct.
It's a great film.
It's all-timer. Top 20 for me of all time.
Yeah, I can roll with that.
I'd put it in there. So you're number two.
So we had Blake Lively, now to bring her husband in.
No.
This is as tight as this film goes.
Nice. Yeah. It's less than a seat. It's a box.
It's a box. Buried. Now, this film I have heard about. You had mentioned it to me. And around the time that I saw Cage, I was going to watch Buried. But when you watch one film with one character, you kind of... I've seen like two other films. There's another interesting one on Netflix, which is kind of one... Well, I don't want to say anything because it's a spoiler, hence why I didn't bring it up. This film, and when this came up for One Location, I was like, you've got to do it. You've got to give it a shot. Oh, my days. It's not something I sign up to a lot. Claustrophobia is one of my fears. Like, I
tight spaces. Oh, is it? Okay.
Tight spaces. I can kind of toy with tight spaces. Sometimes I put myself in one, but I know I can break out of it, you know? I kind of push my limits. However, when I know it's something that's contained and you have no control, I would freak the fuck out. This is why sometimes I'm even scared to do like stuff like with people like, oh, do cave-in. No. I don't want to be going in a hole and not be able to pull back out. I will lose my shit.
You mentioned caving. Do you remember when we went to Bude when we were all younger?
Yes. Yeah.
So you were the motherfucker who didn't do the caving.
I did do it. I could get out because I've been convinced that other people could get out, you know?
Some of those places were tight, you know?
But this is artificial caving, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? In the same breath.
But that part where you go up the ramp and then it vertically drops down and you've got to angle yourself in. I was like, ooh. I suffer from claustrophobia, but even I was back then, I was like, bit tight.
Respectfully, I knew bigger guys got through, so I knew I could get through it. That's kind of the way I worked with it. That was how I knew I could.
What up, Yash?
No bullshit was said. Like, if man could do it, then I'm going to do it too. You know what I mean? That was just the way it went down. But yeah, so this film of a man waking up, like gagged, with nothing but a lighter, a pencil, and a phone, in a coffin, buried, leave me out of it. Like, I'm not going to lie, 127 hours was on the list. It didn't make the list because I wanted to bring some fresh stuff in there. And that's like being caught with an arm. That I could possibly lose my shit on, but I'd be all right because I still got movement. This, where, no. The shivers. Like, nah. And the ending. Look, that's it. I'm not going to say anymore. Like, whoa.
No spoilers. Dude, it's a goodie.
Yeah.
No argument. I like the fact that you put it on. My number two, though, I got to go with one of the all-time greats. Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window.
I knew this was going to be on your list. Now,
of course. It's my favorite Hitchcock film.
Do you know there's a few Hitchcocks that was on this list that came up? And I was like, I really wish I had a chance. As well as one of my all-time favorite plays, An Inspector Calls. Here's why I fucked up on this. It's as much as it's one location, because I saw him looking at various others, but it's from this prism of that location, I toyed with it. And I was like, even if I leave it off, Nico's definitely got it. So that's why I left it. That is why I left it, to be honest. But it's a goodie.
This is an old movie, which I believe a lot of the younger modern audience may not have seen. The premise is very simple. A photographer has broken his leg, and he is confined to his bedroom. While he is in his bedroom, he is kind of, almost in a perverse way, not eavesdropping and not perving on, but it feels perverse.
It's the only way he's got to, especially
looking in on what his neighbors are up to.
You have to give it the time capsule of its era as well, as to why there was nothing else for him to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Man didn't have a switch.
Exactly. It wasn't going to happen. There was no Facebook to log on to. This was it.
It's And what he sees over the course of observing a particular neighbor for a few days is an alleged murder. So now we have a story. We have a guy who can't move seeing a murder or murderer. Excuse me. A murder or murderer. How does he catch him? How does he stop him? Who does he get involved? Who does he tell? How does he keep it a secret? How does he get a story out of this? How does he not get seen by the murderer and get murdered? Is the murderer in fact a murderer, or is it paranoia and cabin fever setting in? All of these wonderful things, all wrapped up in a big, pretty James Stewart and Grace Kelly-shaped bow. Ooh, it's good.
It's a goodie. It's a goodie.
Oh, cool. It's good.
I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it.
Oh, it's so good. Your worst.
I'm tempted. I don't know why, but I'm tempted to ask you to. I know it breaks the rules, but I'd like to see your worst first, because I would like.
It's not a bad movie. My worst is legitimately not a bad movie. It would have actually been my number 10. But then, honestly, I thought trying to make a bullshit case for Jaws was more fun. And that's the key thing of what I'm getting at. This movie, the premise of it, because you know I like experimental cinema that kind of breaks conventions and challenges how we normally perceive movies to be or should be, right? Tarantino does it all the time. Don't make restaurant scenes. Don't make table scenes. Really? I present to you Reservoir Dogs. I present to you The Royale with Cheese. That's how you do a sitting down scene, right? People who can break conventions always, always have my time. This, from 1981, My Dinner with Andre. Now,
I saw this come up a lot, but I have to.
So, dude, look, it's applauded and lauded on everywhere. Like, everywhere, this movie scores. Yeah, this movie scores high everywhere. I found it intriguing but dull. But it's essentially two guys. This is basically if AJ and Nico hadn't seen each other for 20 years and came back and talked about where their moral compass was at. That's kind of the movie. It's two friends who are reconnecting. Wallace Shawn, who you'll know as the balding teacher from Clueless. Let me bring up the poster again. Look at the
dude. Yeah, I'm sorry, Chris. Yeah.
The dude from Clueless. Or Inconceivable from The Princess Bride, right? So it's a kind of meta take on his life, meeting his friend Andre Gregory, both of them vying to be successful playwrights, Andre being the much more successful one, who's gone off and basically he's done what people do in their backpacker years. He's found himself and he's recounting all of these crazy tales. And while he's recounting these tales, he's emphasizing what it is to be alive, and that by discovering the meaning of what being alive really is, it effectively becomes something very scary, because the proxy of that is it means you become very aware of death and how fallible you are. And as he's going along this long discourse, telling all of these different stories, the stories are interesting, but they're not delivered in a particularly like wow factor way. So it's very much you've kind of fly on the wall, sitting in on two people having dinner. It's not like, it's not like Christoph Waltz talking about the squirrel in Inglourious Basterds. You're not fucking zoned in on it. Like, I'm hanging on this guy's every word. You're kind of just a fly on the wall there. That's kind of how the movie treats you. And I don't think that was the right decision to make, because the stories are interesting, but they're not delivered in a way which keeps you hanging on Andre's words. The discussions they have about what makes what's right and wrong, how one is human versus how one is not, the fact that we've become obsessed with the aesthetics in life, all of these things are interesting concepts to discuss. And the dialogue is kind of witty, but there was this just overriding feeling I had of, okay, I'm a bit bored here.
I get it. I know when that happens.
There's nothing wrong with you. I'm just a bit bored.
Yeah, you're not great. You're not bad, but you're just not great. I get it.
And yet everyone's like, this is great. It's kind of how I felt about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. The whole world is like, this is the greatest comic book movie ever. I'm like, slow your roll. Slow okay. your roll. It's good. It's not even the best comic book movie of the year. Fight me. It's yeah, good. Just yeah.
Mm. Mm.
And because I didn't have anything that was legitimately bad, I went with yeah.
I'm about to remind you, bro. That's why I wanted Please. To see yours first.
Tell me.
It was my number 10 once when we done something else, but it's my worst this time. The menu.
Oh, this tremendous piece of shit.
The menu. The more I thought of something in one location, this came to mind. So yes, you start off with everyone jumping on the boat, but it's to be on this exclusive island in this exclusive restaurant for this. It was films about fine dining. And when you first start this film, it gives you that. It gives you the feels of, oh, this is interesting. Where do we go?
Yes.
You know, it's got that. Oh, you feel the privilege. You feel the obsceneness, you know, everyone who's so self-entitled and how they're there. The development of what the story leads into lost me, you know.
Completely.
The chef who feels that he was hard done by, even though he's got the world eaten out of his hand and just trying to take attack and digs at people. The more I thought of this film, it's amazing what context can do, because a film that was previously my worst, being Hippopotamus, being filmed about animals, was going to be my number 10.
Right.
This film, which was previously number 10 because of fine dining, and it displays fine dining, was a number 10. But when you break it down for a film and something set in one location, the way this was, it was ridiculous. And then when we take it just slightly out of the location, you know, a dinner game, and Nicholas Holt being the only one who's really excited for it and goes running off and all sorts, that it just lacked. It just got stupid and more ridiculous as it went on. I'm not going to spoil the film for anyone, but it just lacked to me. And I just thought, yeah, for a film set in one location, the menu becomes a failure.
Agreed. Totally. Your number one, I have, is the same number one as me.
I didn't want to make it that, but the minute I hear a film in one location, this film done it. I'm not even going to waste any time. 12 Angry Men. It's just that film. I can't go around it. There's something about a courtroom drama and the debating that I've always loved, and this film just exemplifies that. All we are talking about is a boy who is up for murder, and all we're asking is, if you have reasonable doubt, you can't find him guilty. And the initial guilty, and it just takes one man to go, I don't see it that way. Like, I get what you're saying, but what if? And gradually it starts to change.
Snowball effect.
There's something about that film that will always stick to me.
Yeah.
I try to avoid making it like ever predictable, but 12 Angry Men just deserves the respect that it deserves.
It does. It does. And I love the way that it's almost like, it's almost like a wrestling match, what he does with them. It's a real battle of wits. It's really a real game of passive, it's Gandhiism, isn't it? It's like mental Gandhiism. It's like non-confrontational confrontation.
Yeah.
he just disarms each person intellectually and mentally without actually harming them. And the power of a man to do that just by looking at finite little details and questioning things which might be overlooked and getting us as an audience to buy into that. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
It just has that. It just has that element. It just has it. Nothing but love for it. Nothing but love for that film.
It's a movie for the ages, dude, this one. It's a movie for the fucking ages, and I love it to infinity and beyond. I love it 3,000. It's so good.
I'm there with you. I'm there with you.
Right, Rushmore.
Cool. Well, 12 Angry Men.
Breakfast Club.
That was, yeah. Bear with me a second. This looks like it's going to be pretty easy. So we've got 12 Angry Men. Breakfast Club. I kind of want to say The Well. I also want to say, so here's the thing. I think The Well is available, like it's there.
The whale is very trendy to hate on at the moment, by the way. Just
I'm tempted to go with our most confined films as well. I'm tempted to go Buried and Locke.
Oh, I'd listen to that. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck it, let's do that. Buried and Locke. I love that.
Yeah. Our two locked in joint ones, and the two that are essentially one location to its highest degree.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I love that. Cool. Lock it in.
Cool. Here we go. Let's do this.
Ladies and gentlemen,
how do I do this normally?
The official movie Mount Rushmore of movies set in one location in no particular order is
12 Angry Men.
Our second entry is
The Breakfast Club.
Our third entry is
Buried.
Our final entry into the movie Mount Rushmore of movies set in one location is
Lock. Okay, guys, so that is locked in. It feels good. That's some good ones. So, as we said, we the Silver Screen Dudes, we've done the hard challenge, but it gets even harder. It's over to you now. Head on over to @movie MT Rushmore, where you will see those four films. You cast your vote, and next week we will announce the winner out of The Breakfast Club, 12 Angry Men, Locke, and Buried. Who will win? You decide.
You decide. Head on over to Movie MT Rushmore on Twitter. You can find us on all social platforms at The Silver Screen Dudes. Instagram and TikTok for out of theater reactions. You can check on Instagram and TikTok for some vertical content that we've been doing based around this show and some of Silver Screen news that we've done. Check that out if you haven't on the YouTube channel. Please do like the video, share the video with anyone who you think may be interested if you haven't done so already. And if you are new to the channel, welcome to the film family. We love to have you here. And we will see you next week right here on the Movie Mount Rushmore podcast. I'm AJ. He's Nico. I'm Nico. He's AJ. Ha ha! Who knew? We'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.
Yeah, see ya.